Companies will often set up their overseas operation by setting up a permanent establishment. This allows them to be more flexible with regard to the use of losses. In addition, it keeps the number of associated companies low when calculating the rate of tax. The first step that should be considered when a company wishes to incorporate an overseas permanent establishment is the reporting requirements. In order to incorporate the overseas permanent establishment, the UK company will set up an overseas company, then transfer the trade and assets of the overseas permanent establishment to it, in return for loans or shares. These transactions may come within Schedule 17 of Finance Act 2009. From 1st of July 2009, there is a reporting requirement regarding international movements of capital. This replaces the old Treasury consent rules, which are briefly outlined below. The UK parent or subparent of an international group has to report certain transactions to HMRC within 6 months of them taking place. If a group is structured as, for example, two or more parallel subgroups controlled by a foreign parent, then the UK resident parents of each subgroup will be reporting bodies in respect of their subsidiaries, unless between them they nominate a single reporting body. Basically, a reportable transaction is one where the value exceeds £100 million. The following categories of events are reportable. Firstly, an issue of shares or debentures by a foreign subsidiary. Secondly, a transfer by the reporting body of shares or debentures of a foreign subsidiary in which the reporting body has an interest. And thirdly, any situation which results in a foreign subsidiary becoming or ceasing to be a controlling partner in a partnership. In addition to the £100 million limit, there are exclusions for transactions carried out in the ordinary course of a trade between residents in the same territory, or the giving of any security by a foreign subsidiary to a financial institution. Statutory Instrument 2009-2192 contains further exclusions in relation to cash pooling and certain other transactions. We recommend you look at this statutory instrument. In looking at the reporting requirements, control in relation to a company means the power of a person to secure that the affairs of the company are conducted in accordance with that person's wishes. Whether this is achieved by the holding of shares or the possession of voting power, or any powers conferred by the Articles of Association. Where two or more persons taken together have this power, then they shall be taken to control the company. Control in relation to a partnership means the right to a share of more than 50% of the assets, or of more than 50% of the income of the partnership. Further details as to what needs to be reported can be found in Statutory Instrument 2009-2192. There are some transitional provisions. The main one provides that any reports in respect of events or transactions occurring before the 1st of October 2009 should be reported by the 1st of April 2010. This is intended to allow companies a period of time in which to establish internal procedures to monitor reportable transactions and events. Failure to comply with the reporting requirement will result in a penalty. This will not exceed £300 for the initial failure, with a further additional penalty not exceeding £60 for each day on which the failure continues after the initial penalty was imposed. Transactions prior to the 1st of July 2009 were covered by the old Treasury consent rules. These stated that it was unlawful for a company in the UK to permit a company not resident in the UK, over which it had control, to create or issue any shares or debentures without Treasury consent. Section 765 also covered situations where shares or debentures in a non-UK resident company controlled by the UK resident company are transferred to any person except to a person enabling him to be a director. The penalties for not complying with Section 765 were quite severe, and went as far as imprisonment for up to 2 years, and or a fine. If the offender was a company, then the fine was up to 3 times the amount of tax due on profits in the 36 months following the offence, or £10,000, whichever was greater. Treasury consents could be specific, or they could be general. General consents covered those circumstances set down in paragraphs 1C and 1D of Section 765 ICTA 1988. Paragraph 1C covers the issue of shares and debentures by a non-resident company which is controlled by a UK company. Paragraph 1D deals with the issues of shares or debentures to enable a person to be a director. The consents are quite detailed. However, in outline we can pick out the main aspects of the general consent. General consents generally cover groups and transactions which take place for full consideration. Moving to the tax impact of incorporating an overseas PE. When the PE is incorporated, there may be a cessation of trade, which could lead to the end of an accounting period. Items of plant on which capital allowances have been claimed will be treated as disposed of at market value. This could give rise to balancing allowances and balancing charges. Stock will be treated as disposed of, and capital gains may arise on chargeable assets, which will be treated as disposed of. Gains may arise on intangible fixed assets. All of these transactions will be treated as taking place at market value. Turning to the postponement of chargeable gains. On incorporating a foreign branch, a claim can be made under Section 140 of TCGA 1992 to postpone the gains arising. Certain conditions have to be met. A UK resident company has to have been carrying on a trade outside the UK. The trade and assets, excluding cash used in the trade or a part thereof, are transferred to a company that is non-UK resident. The transfer is wholly or partly in exchange for shares or securities, i.e. loan stock issued by the transferee to the transferer. Following the issue of the shares, the transferer holds at least 25% of the ordinary share capital of the transferee, and a net chargeable gain arises on the assets transferred. If all the conditions are met, the transferer can claim for the net gain on the transfer to be postponed. If the consideration is wholly in securities, then the whole of the gain may be postponed. Where the consideration is not wholly securities, we use the fraction on your screen, i.e. net gain multiplied by the market value of the securities at the date of transfer divided by the market value of the total consideration at the date of transfer. Let me illustrate this. Sherlock incorporates an overseas PE. The net gains that arise are £145,000. The consideration is cash of £300,000 and 200,000 £1 ordinary shares that have a market value of £1.20 per share. The gain that can be postponed is found by taking £145,000 and multiplying it by the value of the shares received over the value of the total consideration. 200,000 £1 shares are received, each worth £1.20, giving a market value of £240,000. Total consideration is £540,000. This gives a gain that may be postponed of £64,444. The gain will come within the charge to tax in the following circumstances. Firstly, if the transferer sells some of the securities received at transfer. The amount to be brought in here will be the gain postponed to the extent not already been charged, multiplied by the market value of the securities disposed of, divided by the market value of the total holding of securities prior to disposal. The second circumstance will be where, within 6 years, the overseas companies sell any of the chargeable assets transferred, which gives rise to a gain at transfer. The gain brought in here will be the gain postponed, a gain to the extent not already been charged, multiplied by the gain on the asset at transfer, divided by the total gross gains at transfer. Again, we shall illustrate this with an example. Continuing with the above illustration, the assets transferred by Sherlock that gave rise to the net gains were as follows. Asset 1, gain of £100,000. Asset 2, loss of £30,000. Asset 3, gain of £75,000, giving a total gain, as before, of £145,000. Let's say that 2 years later Asset 1 is sold for £150,000. The gain chargeable will be calculated as follows. The gain postponed is £64,444. We multiply this by the gain on the asset at the date of transfer, i.e. £100,000. We then divide by the gross gains. Note here, we do not take account of the £30,000 loss on asset 2 at the date of transfer. Gross gains are therefore £175,000, giving a chargeable gain of £36,825. Let us say that 10 years later, Sherlock sells 100,000 of the shares. The market value of the shares at the date of sale is £3.50 each. The gain still postponed is £64,444, less the gain brought in earlier of £36,825, which gives £27,619. The gain chargeable is calculated as £27,619, being the gain postponed and not so far brought into charge, multiplied by £350,000, the market value of the shares disposed of, over £700,000, the market value of all the shares prior to the disposal. This gives us a gain of £13,809. Similar rules apply for IFAs.